Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Pat Jackson. Pat Jackson is an old friend. She's had a lot of ET encounters with different ET groups, has had MyLab experiences. She has an interesting, varied background, been involved for a time with law enforcement. So without any further ado, Pat Jackson, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James. Glad to be here.
Well, the honor and the pleasure is all ours, and we'll have all of Pat's bio information on our website, as well as all of her sketches that she was kind enough to provide, because, among other things, Pat is a talented artist, and she's made very detailed sketches of some of her experiences involving ETs, the military, ET bases, etc. Pat, for the benefit of the listeners, can you tell us a bit about your upbringing and your childhood and some of the formative experiences growing up?
Sure. I'm the oldest of three children. I was adopted. Raised strict Catholic, left that as soon as I was able to. Totally non-religious now. Attended parochial school for 12 years and then went on to college at the University of Wisconsin, where I majored in art and minored in journalism. And now I live in the Northwoods and fish a lot.
Oh, good. I think Dogman hangs around up there too, so this is an interesting place to be. When did you realize that you had kind of one foot in this other realm, so to speak? Having had as many experiences as you had of the unusual variety, did they start at childhood for you?
Honestly, I don't remember that much from childhood, apart from I know weird things were always happening to me, like of a paranormal nature. I remember as a kid going to Gettysburg, and I really didn't want to be there. It wasn't my cup of tea. And that was where I had my first encounter with a full apparition ghost.
Wow.
And he sat and talked to me about, you know, the gift I'd been given as far as my abilities and so on, and just kind of tried to put me at ease with it because I'd learned to hide it because of all the flack I took for having it. So that was real. I just had a lot of strange things I could never make sense of happen to me. But I really didn't get into this until you and I first talked. I think it was around 2007. And that was the first time I'd heard the term MyLab.
Oh, okay.
You were the one that tipped me off to what was going on.
And you've had ET experiences over the years. When did you first begin having consciously remembered ET experiences or even ET-related, UFO-related dreams?
I never really had any dreams about them. It really didn't start until I was targeted. And only after I went through all the malevolent abductions, you know, the MyLab abductions, the malevolent ET abductions. And it was when I learned to overcome fear completely that was when it was like the dike broke, you know, the dam broke, and all these positive contacts started taking place. I think it was just a learning process during my awakening, I guess you could say.
Could you tell us a bit about some of the malevolent experiences that led to your awakening?
Oh, yeah, one in particular involving the Drax. You know, I'd had a number of visits from them at my home, and like I told you, I'd gone through a rep rape. I'd been subjected to an alien love bite. All, you know, anything they could throw at me, they threw at me. The one I remember the most was in December of 2010, and it was the last one I'd have with the Drax. It's very strange because it was different from any others in that I knew it was coming. I knew it was about to happen. And sure enough, bang, next thing I know, I'm standing face to face with one of these things. And by that time, I was so beaten up by what I'd been through, I clearly remember thinking, you know what? If I die, that's great. That's my ticket out of this mess. because I was so beaten up. And this thing hissed at me and said, you know, you're going to go along with our program or we're going to kill you. And I remember I just looked at him as calmly as I could be. And I just said, shrugged my shoulders and said, you know what? Go ahead. And I felt this thing scan my mind to figure out, was I bluffing? Well, apparently it must have gotten the notion I wasn't, because then it conjured up this holographic image of my brother and sister and said, we'll kill them too. And I just shrugged my shoulders and said, okay, go ahead. I felt it scan me a second time. And that's when it must have figured out we've lost control. Because the next thing it did was flew into a rage, lashed out with its claw, and I could see it coming, but I wasn't fast enough. And I tried to swivel away, turn to the side to get away from it, but I didn't succeed. It was faster than I was. And it left two great big scratches all the way around from my chest to my back.
Wow.
So, you know, no matter how many times you have conscious experiences like this, you always are asking yourself, did that really just happen? Was it a dream? You know, was it just my imagination? Well, I happened to pull up my shirt and there were the scratches. And I don't know if I sent you a photo of that or not, but I can.
Yeah, please.
Huge scratches front to back. And then it, boom, I was back in my house, and that was the last time they ever bothered me.
Oh, you mean you wound up back in the house, or they transported you back to the house?
I came to on the couch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd like to see those scratch marks. Were they long parallel marks?
Yes.
Yeah. It's very common for people, particularly women, to display three long, straight, parallel scratch marks down the front, down the sides, down the back, down the thighs. Right. Yeah, and that's the telltale mark.
I don't know why this one only used two of its talons, but you can see they're great big long, and they burn like they typically do. You know, we've all been rep scratched.
Yeah. I've had, you know, marks and bruises from them. And yeah, and sometimes it'll be two marks if that's all they can get their hands on you at the time.
Yeah.
Now, what were your thought process the next morning when you woke up, when you realized you saw the scratches and said, whoa, that was not a dream?
I think by then so much had happened to me and I'd been through so much. At that point, I was just taking things in stride, like, okay, well, I guess it happened again. And I guess I showed him because it got mad.
Did that particular Drac or other ones like it come back after that?
No, that was the last time they showed up. And I mean, they'd show up regularly. I'd hear scratching on my living room walls. You know, they'd be opening portals in my closet. I went through the rep rape, you know, so this was nothing new.
Yeah. What other negative entities had you seen before you had that awakening and before you allowed the fear to wash over you, which allowed you to transition into the next phase of your experiences?
The grays. We had an instance where I believe it was a Rigelian, and this was when my husband was still alive. We both heard it outside our living room window. It happened during the summer. The windows were open. And it was like nothing I'd ever heard before. It was nothing like he'd ever heard before. You know, I live in a woods where every kind of wildlife imaginable is here, you know, so you're familiar with the sounds these animals and stuff make. And this was nothing either of us had ever heard. Well, as it happened, I found a video on the internet of somebody who claimed to have captured one. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. But what I do know is that when we listened to this video, my husband and I were both, oh my God, that's what we heard. Now, if you know anything about the Rigelians, they're like cousins to the Dracs.
Yeah, and if memory serves, Rigel is one of the stars of Orion constellation. Is that correct?
Yep, I think so.
And they're, within the UFO lore, there is a group, apparently, of entities that are generically as the Rigelians, although there may be one group of them. more than one group, rather.
Well, it's probable that there is. I mean, yeah, there's many subspecies of any ET race, good or bad. At least that's been my experience.
So you heard this chilling sound outside.
Yeah, it was like gibberish babbling. But it didn't sound human. It didn't sound animal. We didn't know what we were hearing. And the weird thing was, my husband was very sensitive to it because he had his hands over his ears and he said, my head hurts so bad the whole time this was going on. It didn't affect me at all. I don't know why. But it did affect him, definitely. And it's funny because the guy who made this video had the same reaction to it.
Do you remember the name? I know that a guy named Jonathan Reed claims
that. Yeah, it was him. Yep.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know inside details of the guy's story. The guy received a lot of flack, but from what I remember of the story, from what my friends had told me, who'd sat and debriefed him over many hours privately, you know, Reed told them aspects of his story he didn't really tell many other people. I don't see anything like blatantly false about his claims, because I could see something like the scenario he outlined happening, because things like that have been known to happen, right? So, you know, he brings the body back. He doesn't realize it's still alive. It kind of, you know, it comes to life. And then next thing you know, the military and all these other groups are messing with him.
Down his door, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, that part is believable enough, right?
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, now that you mention it, I've got Jonathan Reed on my friends list, and maybe he'll want to come on and talk sometime. Now, during this process, where the malevolent beings were messing with you, and you've mentioned the Drax, i.e. the Dracos, the Reptilians, and also the Rigelians, when did the deep black elements of the military begin to take an interest?
It was during this whole time, yeah.
And how did that first manifest? And then there was a bleed through into your private life too, because apparently there was some gang stalking, there was some harassment at work.
We were subjected to horrific harassment, James. You name it, they pulled it out of the book and threw it at us.
Yeah, yeah. And please, you know, I know it's, you know, it can make one bitter thinking about it, the inherent injustice of it all. But if you don't mind, if you wouldn't mind sharing that aspect of it, you know, to give the listeners an idea of what you've gone through before you talk about, you know, the transition in the contacts with the more positive beings, I think it would be helpful.
Sure. I was working in law enforcement at the time. I am a certified professional psychic. I don't work as one anymore, but I was back then. I was working child abductions, child homicides. And for some reason that was unknown to me at the time, I suddenly found myself being brutally railroaded from the sheriff's department. And I had no idea why this was going on. The only thing I did know was that they took an intense, intense interest in the fact that I was psychic. In fact, the chief deputy there interviewed everybody who worked with me about it, because I had tried to help some of my coworkers when they'd asked me stuff. So that was when it really started. We were gang stalked. We were subjected to noise harassment. EM weaponry was used on us. We'd wake up with microwave burns all over our bodies, especially the legs. Voice to skull. I mean, just you name it, every trick they had in the book, they threw at us. Black helicopters over the house, military jets in formation that would suddenly disappear into thin air when I went out to photograph them. Yeah, anything they could do. I was even followed through a grocery store, believe it or not. I guess they were trying to make up a dirt file on me because they hadn't dug any up. They were contacting one, I guess. And I found out after I left from some of the guys who were involved in this, they'd actually formed a task force when their first attempt to off me didn't work. And it was dedicated to killing me. I said, you've got to be kidding me. But that's what happened.
You mean they had decided at some point that it was better, you know, they were better off just killing you and being done with it than,
right,
you know.
Right. And their first attempt on me, on my life, was on March 28th, 2002. I was followed to a grocery or to a gas station on my way to work. And while I was in paying for my gas, somebody slipped what was meant to be a lethal dose of GHB in my coffee.
What's GHB?
The date rape drug.
Oh, okay.
Well, what was weird was my sister earlier that night, right before I'd left from work, had come through with a message for me for one of my benevolent ETs who predicted this was going to happen. And he said, whatever you do, just stay down when you go down. And I just laughed and I thought, yeah, right, okay. Well, son of a gun, 15 minutes from work and I knew something was very, very wrong. I got into the jail and collapsed on the floor and went into seizures.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So that was their first attempt on my life. And then when they found out it hadn't worked, there was a whole flurry of cover our butt activity going on, basically.
Do you think, you, just to interject for a second, do you think that you, because you were investigating child kidnappings and whatnot, you think you inadvertently stumbled across something, which maybe,
yes,
you know, involved
the police? Yes, I was getting too close to what was happening to these kids, to this whole worldwide pedophile ring. Because by then I'd made contacts, like, I don't know if you know who Bob Ressler is. He's instrumental in criminal profiling.
Oh, yes, I've read his books, FBI Profiler, yes.
Right. He and I met and became friends. I mean, I had made a few contacts that I think they were just, at that point, they were running scared. Because whether you realize it or not, law enforcement is involved in all these.
Yes.
Pedophile abductions and what have you. So I think I just got too close and they started running scared.
But somehow, because their networks, their dark networks are so pervasive and the linkage is so pervasive, it not only involved corrupted elements of law enforcement, but, like, you know, suddenly black helicopters are showing up. Suddenly you're getting beamed. So there was definitely connections to the
right.
deep,
and
dark.
I found out later the chief deputy had a very close connection with the governor of the state, and they probably went up the ladder from there, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you were just opening too many cupboards. You were just poking right. your nose around too many places.
Right, right.
What happened after that attempt to dose you?
There was going to be another attempt on my life. And at that point, one of the ET counselors came through, and I was on the verge of turning in my badge that morning. And, you know, this had been a dream of mine since I was 7 years old, to go into law enforcement. And I thought, you know, if I give this up, there's no turning back. They're going to blacklist me. You know, the dream is gone. So I was really struggling with that when the counsel came through en masse, and I don't know if you've ever heard them speak, but it's like hearing one voice and 12 voices at once. And at the top of their lungs, even though they don't have lungs, but get out now. Well, I found out later they were going to make another attempt on my life that very night.
So you turned in your resignation right there.
I turned in my
badge.
That was it. Yep. I left.
Wow.
Now I'm glad I did. If you look at what's going on in law enforcement, you know, we've got rogue cops gone wild going on out there.
Oh, yeah, they're not even rogue anymore because they're all trained that way. They purposely recruit psychopaths and then they turn them loose. And if anything,
and they did that at the sheriff's department I was at too. Yeah.
Yeah, and if anything, the female cops are the worst because they, you know, have this chip on the shoulder. They have to prove themselves. They want to prove themselves. They've got like an overdose of testosterone. So many of these women cops, and they just go nuts out there in the field.
Yep.
Did the harassment back off after you resigned, or did it linger for a while, and you were you under monitoring and surveillance for a while?
Oh, it went on for a couple years until the showdown with the DRAC in 2010. Then everything kind of stopped. You know, I've moved. I have still have death rays over the house. But, you know, that's going to go on forever, I think.
Yeah, and those of us who've been on the receiving end of electromagnetic waves and beaming, it's a very real thing, and it could hit it anywhere, anytime. I'd gotten to know Carol Sterling before. I don't know if she committed suicide to get away from all the pain or whatnot, but they were beaming the hell out of her. She was.
Oh, yeah, I'd go through literal nightly torture sessions where I'd be laying on the couch just screaming in pain. But I was just determined, I'm not going to give in to them. I'm not going to give in.
When did the benevolent ETs begin to make their appearance in your life? Was it a gradual incremental process, or was it like whammo, here we are?
Here we are. Whammo, here we are. It was as soon as I had lost all fear. And it's very strange, because that's something my main ET mentor had been trying to teach me all along. Fear does not exist unless we create it. It's what we make our own minds believe. And I guess that lesson finally sunk in, or I just had to be exhausted enough by everything to just say, you know what? Okay, go ahead, kill me, whatever.
When you basically were not in the fear mode, and right. No matter what they threatened you with or attempted to do, it just didn't matter anymore. They kind of lost their grip.
Yeah, and they knew that. So that's really when the doors got thrown wide open, and suddenly all these benevolent ET races are making contact.
Could you give us an idea from their perspective, if the descriptions of some of the groups, and if they gave you like a point of origin so you can differentiate one group from the other? I mean, you would know that some level that some of these different ETs were working together. It's like, which beings began to come to you first and most often?
The angelics were the first.
Could you describe the angelics?
Sure. They're the ones everybody thinks of as angels. They are the oldest ET race, some 10 billion Earth years old. They originated from the planet Absalom until their sun passed too close to that planet and burned it up. Mm. Well, now they're in new digs, many universes from this one. Totally benevolent, unconditionally loving, non-judgmental, just always seeking to empower you. Never interfere with free will in any way, even if you give them permission to or ask them to, because I've done that. they're wonderful, wonderful beings.
How would you describe them? Would you perceive them with your visual senses, or would you perceive them with your third eye etheric vision?
Both. Both. In fact, I've had my mentor appear here in physical human form at least 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
One of the council, basically.
Oh, one of the council.
Uh-huh.
So you've seen him in both aspects. You've seen him, right, as a council member, and you've seen him in human guise, basically.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Now, tell us what these counselors are like. Have you been brought before them? They would talk to you? Would you be sitting there, or would you be standing there? How would these experiences transpire?
Yes, I've been before them, both in, shall I say, good standing, and then not so good standing when I'd screw up. They have wonderful senses of humor. But they are very no-nonsense about this whole thing. When I screwed up, I got a butt-chewing. I mean, granted, it was a kind one, but it was a butt-chewing. They're very, very tall. It would be like an ant standing in front of a Sears Tower.
Wow.
Kind of analogy. They're just, you're awestruck the first time you encounter them. Literally awestruck. I would see them in the typical garb the angelics manifest in, the white hooded robes, which are a sign of purity, I learned. they're awe-inspiring. They really are. Speak thousands of languages. No way to measure their intelligence by any of our means. Extremely, extremely intelligent and wise. That's basically what they're like.
What did he appear as when he showed up in human guise and in 3D embodiment?
Just as a regular guy. But he would do things that I knew it was him. For one example, he has very unique eyes. I've never seen eyes like his before. They're the only way I can describe them, James, would be a shade of blue I've never seen before on anyone and liquid love. And he radiates unconditional love off of him that you feel to the depths of your soul.
Wow.
And he would say things that he and I kind of had, I don't know what you'd call them, catchphrases maybe between us that we, it was kind of like a code we had because of all the surveillance and, you know. But he would say these catchphrases that only he and I knew. So I would, you know, okay, it's him.
And what were the kind of things he would say? It would be kind of like a nudge and a wink and, you know.
Well, okay, I can give you one example. At one point, we had been financially destroyed by the shadow government. And we had been going to food pantries, you know, to help survive. Well, they had every year a dinner around Christmas time. And that year, they had a Santa who was supposedly a minister from a local church come to give presents to these kids who would, you know, probably get next to nothing, if anything. And the gal who ran these dinners knew this, who was going to play Santa, knew this minister that was supposed to play him. And I thought, well, you know, this is so nice of this guy to do this for these kids. I thought, I'm just going to get in line. I'm going to go up and just thank him. So here I am in line with all these little kids. And I'm watching this guy and I'm thinking, my God, he's so good with these kids. And he, you know, he listened to them and he had a box of candy canes next to him. When he was all done, he'd pick one out and give one to each kid. So I get up to him and he just kind of looks at me and he had the weirdest grin on his face. And he just kind of leaned back and cocked his head. And I said, you don't have to worry. I'm not going to sit on your lap or anything. I just want to thank you for what you're doing for the kids. Well, that night, this dinner was dedicated to the people who had been diagnosed with Lyme disease. And I was one of them. And there were quite a few others there that had it as well. And he didn't say anything. And he reached into this box of candy canes and tried to grab as many as his hand could hold. And he wanted me to see that he was doing this. And I thought, what is he doing? And finally, he just dropped them after he knew I saw that and handed me one. And I said, oh, thank you. And I started to walk away. And he goes, wait, come back. He said, you haven't told me what you want for Christmas. Come whisper it in my ear. And I thought, well, this is kind of odd. So I went back over and I said, well, a cure for Lyme disease would be nice. You know, let everybody get over this stuff. Find a cure for it. And he whispered to me, I'm always at your side, which was one of our key phrases.
Uh-huh.
And I walked away thinking, you know, I know that guy. I know him from somewhere. Well, midway through dinner, it dawns on me, the eyes. And I was out of my chair, but he had gone by then. So I went up to Pam, who was the director of these dinners, and who knew the minister that was supposed to play Santa that night. I said, this is going to sound like a very strange question, I know. I said, but what color eyes does that minister have that was going to play Santa tonight? She says, brown. Why? Well, Santa's eyes were that blue. So, I mean, yeah. weird things. But he would always say, I am always at your side.
Well, that's good to know, because this is a feeling that I have about the idea of benevolent ETs that in truth are extended higher dimensional ET family, that especially now the veils are thinning, the frequency is increasing, the human resonance is increasing. It's enabling these friendly ETs to monitor activities here more closely. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and I wanted your take on this too, because there's this notion that the good ETs are just going to land en masse at the White House, which would be the wrong place. If they're going to land anywhere, they'd land on Wall Street.
Absolutely.
Or the
not.
City That's of London. Ridiculous. Take us to your central banker, right? But
that's what we need. No one would think they were bad guys if they landed on the White House lawn, right?
Yeah. Can't wait for the Twitter storm after that. But yeah, you know, what's your take on that? Because there's this notion amongst the New Age la-di-das that, they're just here, they're constantly intervening. But what I found in my life and the people that I know, Pat, is that, I'm not necessarily describing the current present stage of the timeline we're in now, but in the past, the help from the benevolent ETs was more subtle. It was more nuanced. It was not so in your face. Could you describe your take on that?
Absolutely right. They have no need of putting on a flashy show for anybody. They're not here or helping to prove anything to anybody. They're not a circus act, and we don't need to expect them to be. They're very content working quietly behind the scenes until such time that they feel they can come forward. And I know the night I was visited by the Arcturians, I spoke to you and I didn't know who they were and were trying to figure it out. And I had told you, he had asked me about like a first contact event. Did I think humans were ready for this? And I said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Maybe the ones that look just like us, they wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But as far as anything beyond that, no. So it was never in their plan to, let's say, beat the malevolence to the fake alien invasion plan.
Yeah.
Number one, they don't want to cause a mass panic, another War of the Worlds scenario, you know. And number two, they know we're not ready for this. And they don't want to end up having to hurt somebody because they're getting shot at or whatever, you know. So, no, they're going to, and they want to hold off until after this fake alien invasion so that nobody gets everybody mixed up. Nobody would know who was on what side, who were the bad guys, who were the good guys. So, no. They're not going to be making a mass landing anywhere, least of all the White House lawn. You know, it's going to be a very gradual thing, but you're right. They are starting to come forward more now. And they see this as a very slow indoctrination for us down here.
Do they foresee a time when the negative ETs, in conjunction with the hybridized controllers here on the surface, where they would, if they had the opportunity, create a fake ET landing, ET invasion scenario?
I'm sorry, run that by me again.
Do the benevolent ETs, like this Arcturian commander you were talking about, do they get the idea that it's possible the neg ETs allied with the neg hybrids on the surface might pull off some kind of fake ET landing, fake ET invasion?
Yes, they definitely do.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't interfere in free will. So, you know, they can't stop that from happening if that's what they decide to do.
Yeah.
All they can do is respond to it. It's like a chess game, you know, and there's not one, like you said in one of your recent podcasts, this is a very close race.
Yes.
The battle's not won. And what people need to realize is one side is just as strong as the other. This is like a huge tug of war. So they're not going to rush into anything, least of anything that would harm people down here.
Did they ever tell you, whether it was the Arcturans or this council that you've been brought before, about who you were in past incarnations and how you fit in the overall scheme of things and other people like yourself, right? Because I'm sure that there are others that fulfill a similar role, kind of like boots on the ground, ground crew. You know, right. We got to put up with the crap here on the surface in order to get some work done.
Basically, the only thing they told me is, yes, you are a commander. Yes, you are part of the ground crew. There was a core group of my labs that were specifically sent into the Dumbs as my labs to start to expose this pedophile ring. Because there is nothing more sacred to angelics or any benevolent ET race than their children.
Yes.
Any children. So what's going on with this pedophile ring horrifies them. So they told me that much. And to be honest, I don't really get that all that wrapped up in that part of it, James. You know, I'm just me. I'm just here. And I'll do what I can to help stop this stuff.
You've already done a tremendous amount, you know, the work you did as a psychic, and you're right there in the midst of them all, right?
Right. But I try not to get wrapped up in that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because that leads to ego activation, that leads to,
exactly,
you know,
exactly,
all these big distractions and losing focus, which is kind of, you know, the chief form of amusement for so many people that are wannabes, that want to be in this field and want to be real players, but really they're not. Because they're just too wrapped up in themselves and their egos
are
activated.
The whole ego thing. Yeah, exactly right. And you just did a podcast on that with the
esoteric messiahs. Oh, they're, right. They're such a tiresome lot when you're around these people. Yes. You've been around them, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's like there's no off switch. They're just going on and on and on.
And on and on and on. And they're going to convert you and you're going to see it their way.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they don't like you, like it when you use certain terms. And that's what the religious types have done for countless millennia, for centuries, where, oh, you know, if you say or do certain things a certain way, that leads to eternal damnation. And so you just see the other side of the coin where it's the same message, but in different terms, where if you say all these things, if you use the term Saturday, because there's no other way to describe Saturday, you're giving homage to Saturn and Kronos and all that stuff. And well, what am I going to call it? The day after Friday, you know, the day before Sunday. And see, some of these people, they know too much for their own good, and they can't see the forest for the trees.
Part of this though, from the benevolence perspective, is discernment. We have to learn discernment. None of us are going to have all of the pieces of the puzzle. We're all given specific pieces that apply to our mission, that apply to our own life paths, that apply to us spiritually. But none of us are going to have all the answers or have them.
That's true.
It's that simple.
That's true. And all I try to do in my podcast, my colleagues and I, because really I represent, you know, a group of us. I'm not just me here.
Right.
What we try to do is come up with the most fact-based information, even if it's anecdotal, but if we source it from what we feel is a valid source, and we present it and we leave it up to the person and their own discernment skills, you know, whether to accept it or put it on a shelf for the time being or reject it entirely, that's entirely up to the listener. And and there's nothing, you know, once we've done our part, that's all we can do. And then we just turn the page and move on. But we're not going to try to convert people, you know, and all that stuff. So and it should be understood, folks, when Pat was telling me all this stuff several years back now, she was not aware that there were Arcturans. She was not aware that there were Andromedans. She didn't know. I mean, she didn't know there was a guy out there, Alex Collier. Alex, if you're out there listening, please come on my show. Hint, hint, hint. She didn't know about all this because, like so many of us, Pat had her nose to the grindstone. So she didn't have time to go surfing the net and you're watching all these endless YouTube videos and listening to all these podcasts. She was living it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I had my hands full with what I was doing, to be honest. But no, I'd never, well, even the night I spoke to you and I said, I just got taken aboard this ship, you know, with the Arcturians. I didn't know who they were. Kept saying was the wise ones, the wise ones. I had to go dig and find out who were the wise ones, figure out who they were.
That's a very good sketch you drew of them. Really does have a resonance with me, too. Some of us have had encounters and know about these blue-skinned beings, the role that they have behind the scenes, which a lot of these benevolent beings, but it bears repeating, that they like to work behind the scenes. They're very covert. They work like the ultimate spy masters, working through people on the ground. It's nothing really in your face. People have to understand that, and people have to question the source when people are always talking about, and you'll come across these in the field where it's like, oh, you know, they're just constantly passing messages on from their benevolent ETs, and you have to listen to the gist of the message. If it's just metaphysical pablum, chances are these people are not plugged in to the right ET groups. In the time we got in this first segment, Pat, can you tell us a bit about your encounters with Palladians, Plaharans? You know, they have different names, but basically the human-looking beings, we kind of look like them. They don't look like us. Well, oftentimes depicted as having blonde or light brown hair. Apparently, they trained you to fly their craft and taught you other things. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I've had a few of those. Mostly the Plaharans, the Tausitians, and Andromes have been the main human-looking ones. The Plaharans, well, where to even start on them? Very heavily involved in this because they are cousins of our forebears, the Lyrans.
Yes.
Very different, yet very similar to us. And the same thing with the Andromes. Very much, their planet is very much like Earth. They too see their children as their most valuable resource. Children there get trained in every trade and occupation imaginable. And then when they have completed that, they're free to do whatever they like as far as, well, for lack of a better word, occupation, because they don't hold 9-to-5 jobs like goes on down here. They're basically an agricultural society. Their terrain there is very much like Earth as far as landscape. But they work, the one common thing they all have is they all work together to support the whole race. You know, they might live in small communities, like the Andromes and the Plaharans both live in small communities. They don't live in like great big huge cities. And these are spiritual communities, and they all work together for the common good. You don't pay for anything. There's no financial system. And that's what we're going to be reverting to. So basically, if we study their way of doing things, we have a blueprint for what we're going to be doing very soon. They consider everyone family. Now, the Andromes, they're very leery of human emotions. First few times I met them, they were very reserved, very stand back because they were afraid of human emotion. How would I act towards them? And it was only after time that they realized, okay, well, this one's safe. She's not going to go postal on us. that they warmed up, you know, and really started acting like themselves. My ET mentor has an Andromes kind of right hand, whose name is Aaron, and he has a son named Akhil. Well, I had just lost a dog very, very dear to me. And on Andromeda, the kids have these little pets. I call them puppy worms. They have a name for them. I don't know, remember what the name for them was. But they have these little puppy worms. It looks like a caterpillar, the body does, but the head looks like a puppy dog. And they act like a puppy dog. Well, this Akhil could feel how sad I was at losing this dog that I was so close to. And he came over to me and he said, here, you can have my, whatever they call them, puppy worms. He said, here, you can have mine, your family now. Well, I'm not a crier, but God dang, I almost busted up bawling. You know, how this kid really didn't know me. It was like the first time I'd met him. But that's how they are. Once they know you're like them, you're in, you're family.
Yeah.
And you're treated as family. And that's very common among all of them.
So just to set the record straight, when you use the term androms, andromes or androms, you're referring to what others refer to as andromedans, basically the
right.
same or similar
most
grouping.
Call them andromedans. They prefer to be called andromes.
Andromes, okay. How do they appear to you?
There's different races, just like any other ET race. Aaron is a blue-skinned androme. I think you have a sketch of Mayalto that was my initial contact. That was an oriental-looking androme.
Mm-hmm.
So they have different appearances depending on, you know, which species of andromedan they are.
It's a big system that they come from, so
yeah.
They're all not all going to look alike.
Right.
As far as the Plejehrens are concerned, did they show you what their world looked like, or did they take you there? How did that work?
Oh, yes. In fact, we made a couple trips there with some students I was teaching so that they could see it too.
Were these human students or were these ET students? Or?
Yeah, no, humans from here. Humans from here.
Did this occur kind of like in what the students would have perceived as a dream state when they were, you know, in a nocturnal setting or something when they were asleep, or were they fully conscious when they were taken over there?
They were conscious. I don't know what anybody else calls it. I just know what I call it, splitting consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our minds know no boundaries. They truly don't. And splitting consciousness is you can be wide awake, perceiving everything in one location, yet be in others at the same time and being just as perceptive in them. So I would teach my students how to do this. They would get to see what the Pleiades was like.
When they got into that state that you'd show them, I don't know if it was a theta brainwave state or whatever, and then the Plejehrens would say, okay, now is an ideal time to take them on this journey.
Right, they take them basically on a tour and teach them about the planet.
Oh, okay. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment, and we've been interviewing Pat Jackson, alien contactee, abductee, has had my lab experiences, background in law enforcement. It's been a fascinating first segment. For the benefit of our listeners, Pat, how would they be able to contact you and, you know, share perhaps similar experiences?
They can contact me by email, jacksonpsi@yahoo.com.
Okay, we've reached the end of the first segment. For those of you listening, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.